gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages.
And especially you, fat, sweaty wrestling fans. This bout has a 30-minute time limit.
This contest is set for one fall.
Seriously, why even say one fall? It's always one fall.
Oh, you didn't know?
Welcome to Shoot Radio, the only pro wrestling show that threatens its fans with figure five leg locks, triple axe handles, and large packages. Wait, what?
Woo, woo, woo! You know it!
Let's move on. Now introducing the tag team champions from the not-so-mean streets of suburban Toronto. This is The Chris and his partner. And yes, I mean partner like that. From the well-landscaped subdivisions of suburban Chicago, it's Johnny P. Get ready, wrestling fans, to sit through this utterly ridiculous gimmick match known simply as Shoot Radio.
All right, we're back with episode 3 of Shoot Radio, and this week we're going to be talking about finishing moves, Johnny.
Episode 3? It's 2.
Fuck, I forgot about episode 0. I'm not editing this out.
No, leave it in. Because you know what? If you think it's 3, and it's the third one you're listening to, then you're right. If you're looking at the label, episode 2, you're also right.
It was 2, ref.
2.
You holding up the devil horns now so the crowd knows it was only 2?
There's no crowd.
Oh.
I wish there was a crowd on my couch right now watching me do this.
Crowd of kids, maybe.
There is. They're actually tied up in my basement.
Oh.
Just kidding. I can't afford a basement. episode 2. This is Finishers. This is Shoot Radio, by the way. The wrestling podcast done by wrestling fans who want to talk about wrestling. What a novel concept. I'm not going to talk about what happened on Raw a few days ago. I'm not going to talk about, oh, who do you think's going to win the next TNA pay-per-view? I couldn't give a shit. I don't even know what TNA is. What am I even talking about? I'm talking about the good shit.
Nobody knows what TNA is.
No. I'm talking about the good shit. A fucking Greg the Hammer Valentine shit. I'm talking about the Fart Foundation. And the Heart. The Heart Foundation.
Worlds are colliding.
That should be. Is that a tag team too? Collided Worlds?
It should be.
Like the natural disasters. You know, and we'll talk about, you know, Rock, Austin, why not? But again, what happened on last week's Raw is irrelevant unless something so amazing happened that it fits into one of our topics. And this week's topic is finishers, finishing moves. Devastating finishing moves. You know what I'm talking about. What are some of the ones at the top of your head, Chris, like that are just like the most well-known finishers out there?
You got to go with things like, you know.
Stunner,
you know, atomic leg drop, the sharpshooter.
Rock bottom.
Rock bottom's a good one, too. Quiz for Johnny. What's the real name of a rock bottom? What's that move called?
As in, like, real name or another wrestler that used to use it? Didn't Booker T used to have that move?
Yeah, they called it the bookend. It's this is your wrestling trivia moment. It's called the Uranage.
Wow. Uranage.
Urine.
Yeah, urine. So, interesting. You know, I'm glad you're around here because you can kind of let people know that technical pro wrestling jargon.
Yeah, the legit names of stuff.
The legit names of fake wrestling. Now, is that because you're Canadian that you're forced to know all that stuff?
No, it helps.
Like, did you have to learn, like, this, like, as part of gym class? Because my knowledge of pro wrestling in Canada is that it's treated with much more respect than in the States. So, I mean, is that something, like, seriously, though, is that something that, like, the more technical aspects were better communicated to you?
I think it's more that a lot of Canadian media outlets back in, like, the 60s covered wrestling in the same way they'd cover like boxing and stuff like that. Like if you go on the CBC's website, there's a really interesting interview that was done, I think it was in Maple Leaf Gardens, with Abdullah Farouk, later known as the Grand Wizard, who managed the original Sheik. And it's really interesting because it's a serious sports reporter that would have covered, you know, hockey, football, baseball, stuff like that. And he's doing an interview with a wrestling manager.
And how was it like perceived back then?
Well, I think it was, I mean, I'm not quite that old, but.
Well, you're not 70?
65. You know, I think it, much like it probably even was in the 80s, like, you know, there was probably people that watched it and knew it was scripted. There was probably some small percentage that thought it was 100% legit. Yeah, I think it was just because the media treated it as if it was a legit sport. It just kind of had more credibility. But it's funny because there's still the same thing that you get everywhere else where people look down their noses at it. But it always makes me laugh because it'll sneak out at work or something like that, that I'm a wrestling fan. And these guys will be like, oh man, that stuff's so stupid and fake. And then they'll say stuff like, so like, did you hear, you know, The Rock's coming back for WrestleMania this year and stuff like that? It's just, it just makes me laugh. It's like, you were watching. And they're like, oh, well, you know, I was watching, you know, the hockey game, but, you know, during the commercials, I would flip to wrestling.
Right.
But
yeah.
But you ask them what the score in the hockey game was, and they don't even know.
Of course. It's all bullshit. Everything out of their mouth anyway. So, you know what those guys need? Those guys need a finisher performed on them. And a finisher that would cause, like, real-life pain. Okay, so obviously, wrestling finishers, the purpose of them is to either set up a pin or possibly some other type of finish of the match, hence the name finisher. It's a big deal. When you get your finisher off, it's a big deal. People don't always kick out. They're not supposed to. When they do, it's something major. Maybe there's a ref getting involved, whatever. So these finishers, whether they look intimidating or whether they look like they would really hurt you in real life or not, it's a big part of it. But what I want to ask you, Chris, is what finishers out there among the various different eras do you think look like they would cause a lot of pain in real life if somebody did that to you?
Number one on my list would have to be Paul Orndorff's pile driver. Like, I can remember back in grade 7 watching Mr. Wonderful, and, you know, in that short time in my life when, you know, you kind of want wrestling to be real, and even though maybe deep down you know that it's scripted, but, you know, there's that part of you that's trying to look for the things to justify that it's real. Like, watching Paul Orndorff's pile driver just made me think, like, there is no way this is real, because if he was really doing that to people, he would be murdering somebody different every week. Like,
how was his pile driver different than a regular one? I don't remember.
He would jump up in the air. Like, like most guys, you know, they kind of, for the kind where, you know, like, there's basically two kinds of pile drivers. Like, you know, the one, like, kind of like the tombstone where you drop to your knees, and then there's, you know, more like the Jerry Lawler style, like the sit down pile driver.
They fall backwards, yeah.
Right. Well, Paul Orndorff, like, got a guy up, like, for a sit down pile driver, but then he would jump. Like, not just, you know, sit down quickly. He would, you know, go up in the air holding this guy.
Oh my God.
And it just looked like, it just looked brutal. Like, I can't believe there isn't, like, you know, a long line of people with broken necks because of that. Like, it just looked like it would kill you.
I mean, he must have done it with such perfection. That's why he was so wonderful. Get it?
Ho, ho, ho.
Would you trust him to give you one of those pile drivers?
I wouldn't trust anybody to give me a pile driver. Anything that's like dropping you on your head.
I wouldn't even trust Coco Beware to sing me a song about fucking pile drivers. As in, I could probably get hurt from that too.
It sounds like an argument. It sounds just like a pile driver. And that's a good segue because do you remember his finisher, the Ghostbuster?
If Coco Beware had the Ghostbuster?
That was his finisher, yeah. He would get a guy up like he was going to give him a vertical suplex.
Okay.
And then he would just, like, drop him on his head.
Oh, yeah, like a brain buster, but worse.
But, like, from, like, well, I mean, he's about 4'2", but, I mean, from from that high up in the air, it just looked ridiculous. Like,
I want to say, correction, he may have been 4'2", but if you measure from Frankie's head, he was 4'7".
That's right. But that was a move that just, like, it was funny because, I mean, Coco Beware is this, you know, fun-loving mid-card baby face, you know, flapping his arms, singing bird, bird, bird. And then he's, like, dropping guys on their heads. Like, it was one of the most incongruous, like, you know, character finisher combinations I could even think of. Like, you know, he should be giving guys, like, you know, a wet willy or something while he's flapping with the other arm.
Right. He's doing something bird-like or just wacky, like a Santino Cobra or a Mankind, you know, Socko. Something like a goofy finisher, right?
But he would give him, like, the Ghostbuster, and then he would, like, lie on top of them with, like, like none of his body was touching the mat, and he would be flapping his arms and legs like a bird. It's like, I've just killed this guy. He's so dead. I don't even have to, like, hook a leg.
His finisher should be like chewing up food and spitting it into the other guy's mouth for him, like a bird would do. That'd be like the perfect finisher. Like, oh, here we, he called for the regurgitate. Oh, he spit into his mouth. Oh, you know.
That's that was, more of a heel move.
Totally. That was funny is after you mentioned Ghostbuster, I remember that now. I didn't remember initially. And it's kind of weird too. Like, how about finishers that have a name that have nothing to do with the gimmick or the character at all? Like, what the fuck is Ghostbuster have to do with anything other than the movie of Ghostbusters?
Exactly. I mean, it was a popular movie at the time, but it's like, it's like, okay, you're a bird. You come to the ring with a bird. Your entrance music sings about birds, and your finisher is going to be the Ghostbuster.
Right. That would be like, I'm going to have a finisher called the Avatar. You know, it's like, what the fuck? That makes no sense at all. I don't get that. And on that note, let me keep going on. All right, so finishers that would actually look like they hurt you. I'm going to have to say, as a big, most everybody is that I know is a big Macho Man fan, I'm going to say Macho Man's flying elbow because, you know, he was a very good technical wrestler, even in an era like the 80s where you didn't do a whole lot of that. You could still tell, you know, in certain matches. And so I know that he wouldn't injure somebody, you know, it probably wouldn't happen. But if you think about it, with the intensity that elbow comes down the top rope, and it wasn't just him. I know other people have had flying elbow. You know, Shawn Michaels have done it for a while. A lot of wrestlers do that. That move in general always like is kind of like, damn. Elbows are freaking sharp. that could easily cause some damage. You could probably break someone's, I don't know. I'm no doctor, but like, is there like a chest bone of some sort?
Your
I don't
sternum.
Know. Yeah. Break your Howard sternum, whatever. that would kill though. So I'm going to have to say Macho Man's elbow. I think I would not like to be on the receiving end of.
Yeah, that's legit. Anything, yeah, where it's something pointy coming at you with a full person's body weight from up in the air.
Yeah.
That's going to hurt for real.
And also somebody with crazy eyes and a crazy beard and hair too. It's like, doesn't make it any better. Seeing this fucking, you know, if you're on the ground, and you like crack your eye open a little bit and you see this fucking psycho on the top rope. It's like, oh shit, I'm going to die.
Some of the other ones for me are just like some of the submissions that you see. Because I can always remember, like, particularly, you know, I've spent a lot of time in my life, you know, wondering whether or not the figure four leg lock really hurts.
You know, I just put that. It's kind of funny you say that. I have a little cheat sheet with a couple of questions on here. And that's what I wrote on here is. And my question to you is, before you even get into it, would a figure four leg lock actually hurt?
Well, let me answer that with an anecdote.
Nice. So,
I am not a witness to this, but it was told to me by a good friend that I trust that would have no reason to fabricate this.
Ric Flair?
Oh, damn. I promised I wouldn't say.
You know, to protect his anonymity, how about just like Rick F? Just to protect his anonymity. No,
that's too obvious. How about R. Flair?
Okay, R. Flair's better. Yeah.
There we go. So this friend of mine, when he was in high school, or probably junior high, they were at like a church picnic. And as, you know, tween-age boys are apt to do, they were doing wrestling holds on each other. And so this one friend of his, they're at this, you know, church picnic in a park. His mother is sitting on a blanket in the park just talking to one of her friends. And he goes up to her and he says, okay, Mom, this isn't going to hurt, but I'm just going to put the figure four leg lock on you. And before she knows, this poor woman knows what's happening, he puts the figure four leg lock on her and starts reefing on this woman's knee. And she is screaming in pain.
So she's selling it.
Well, that's the problem, because he thinks, oh, my mom's awesome. She's selling my figure four.
Mom's putting me over again.
Exactly. So, long story short, 3 arthroscopic knee surgeries, and 20 years later, she still walks with a cane.
What? True story.
True story. So, if you want to know if the figure four leg lock applied correctly hurts, it does. Ask that lady.
Wow. Can we get her for an interview? Is she still around?
Probably. That would be a great interview.
That would be really great. We're like, all right, we're going to let you apologize to your mom now.
Yeah, really?
Man, wow.
Like that, like talk about having a guilt trip for life. It's like, he lives an hour away and she's like, can you come over and, and help me do some stuff around the house. My knee's feeling a little sore today.
You know, from the figure four back in like 87.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, that time.
Wow. That's fucked up.
I know. That's like, out of all like the stories I know of people personally or people attached personally, like everybody's got a story of it, you know. I gave my brother a black eye, or I, you know.
Right.
But that's the worst of anyone I've heard.
Dude, I'll give your mom a figure four. It's like, oh. Easy, buddy. This actually happened.
Yeah. Time out.
You know, okay, so on submission finishers, what's your take on moves like the crossface? Where, I mean, to me, it looks like it could easily be escapable. I don't know. To me, it looks like he can just pull your other arm out and, I don't know, give him a thumb to the eye or something. Like, do you think those moves, I know they're intended to look like you're killing the person. No pun intended, Benoit, if you're listening. And I know that's the intention of them, but I mean, don't they also look like they could easily be escapable too?
See, you've segued into an interesting topic that I wanted to bring up later. And it has to do with, you know, the believability of finishing moves just within the context of wrestling. Because if you think about wrestling as a whole, like, I mean, there's a certain, obviously, suspension of disbelief you have to have. I mean, you know, if you or I wanted to give each other a vertical suplex, if, you know, if I wanted to suplex you and you didn't want me to suplex you, I couldn't suplex you. So,
wait, is that a fat joke on me?
A little.
I think that's a fat joke. I don't
okay,
like it.
We'll go with a fat joke. No, but you know what, you know what I'm saying, right?
I get what you're saying. The person being suplexed probably has to do more work than the suplexer.
Exactly. But, you know, if I'm watching wrestling, I can accept that, you know, these superheroes or whatever you want to call them, these superstars, they can exist in a world where suplexing someone else is possible. But what drove me nuts about wrestling then, drives me nuts now, is kind of like what you were saying, when there's, like, even though there's, what am I trying to say? Even though in this world, you know, it has to be internally consistent. So, you know, there's guys fighting each other. Yeah, they're giving each other suplexes. But when there's times when, you know, a guy has an opportunity to defend himself, he still defends himself. And to go along with what you're saying about, you know, something like the crossface looking easily escapable, the kind of thing that would drive me nuts, and it particularly was true with certain tag team finishers, which, for the record, like, I really like tag team finishers, and I want to talk more about them
great.
Later. But, you know, my favorite example of just how, you know, how can you suspend your disbelief is the Road Warriors Doomsday device. Like, here you've got a guy, like, you know, I can remember, because for those that may not remember, Doomsday device is one of the Road Warriors would put one of their opponents on their shoulders, like sitting on their shoulders like a little kid that was too tired to keep walking at Six Flags. And the other guy goes up.
Piggyback or horseyback ride or whatever?
You know? Not even, like actually sitting on the shoulders, like, you know, the kind of thing you wouldn't do with a kid older than three. And I can remember times, and then like the other guy would climb up to the top rope and, you know, clothesline him off. But I can remember times like watching WWF superstars or whatever, and like seeing the guy that's sitting on the one Road Warrior's shoulders, like, you know, very meticulously trying to maintain his balance so that he stays in a sitting up position.
Right.
It's like, why don't you just, like, you know, lean backwards and you won't have to take the Doomsday device? Like,
fall
exactly.
Off. Just fall.
Or you know, yeah. you're standing there, both your arms are free. Like, punch the guy on whose shoulders you are in the head. Like, that just always drove me nuts. Or things like Goldust when he would do the Shattered Dreams. It's like,
oh, that was
it's
awesome.
Like, okay, you are holding yourself up on the ropes with your legs spread. Like, get down.
Well, right, get down from there. Well, you know, you want to be careful you don't move too much, because Goldust is supposed to kick the turnbuckle. If you move too much, he's actually going to kick you in the nuts.
But, like, get out of
so
there. And
you better play along.
Well, yeah, from the, like, the theatrics point of view, but, like, you know, that's the times in wrestling where it's just like, come on. It's like when Rob Van Dam's giving the guy the Van Terminator and he's like, he's holding the chair in front of his face for him. It's like, you know, why would you do that? Like, throw the chair away.
What, you expect him to actually throw it away? That's a lot of work. And also, why would you throw away a perfectly good chair?
Yeah, maybe his plan was like they hit him on the way down or something.
Yeah, right. Well, the one that always drives me nuts, and I know it's not a finisher, but I guess you can call them signature moves, right? Not finishers, but signature moves that lead up to it, is when Randy Orton does that ridiculous DDT through the ropes.
100% agree.
That is one of my most hate. I mean, he's Randy Orton's also one of my most hated wrestlers of all time. I despise him. I think he looks like an asshole in the ring. And I know it's not a character. I think he's an asshole in every interview I've read or heard. And he just seems like he works really stiff and doesn't give a fuck about anybody else. Anyway, so that move, you basically have to climb through the second rope and rest your feet on the ropes just so he can give you a DDT, which DDT used to be a finisher too. So it's like, great, I'm going to stand there and let you pull me in. It's like, you might as well give me a 6192 while you're at it and get in that stupid position.
Yeah, know? And that's... You're hitting on exactly what I wanted. It's just like, you know, especially like when you're wrestling this guy that, you know, presumably you've scouted. It's like, okay, he's thrown me onto the ropes, you know, facing away. Rey Mysterio has thrown me onto the ropes, facing away from him. I'm just going to take this time to, you know, just have a little rest. Like, oh, yeah, I got kicked in the face.
This would be a good time to rest my armpits on the rope.
Yeah, so that's what drives me nuts. And I realize sometimes it's hard because there's, you know, intricate timing. But yeah, the Doomsday Device, like that to me is, you know, just my favorite example. Like just seeing guys like, you know, struggling to stay balanced so that they get, you know, so that they get destroyed.
Right. That is pretty funny, you know.
Because compare it to, you know, one that I think, a tag team finisher that I think was well executed was, you know, the Jim Neidhart, Bret Hart heart attack.
Because he's holding exactly. Him. You can't get out of that
and
shit.
And it's, you know, within the consistency of the universe, like, okay, they've beat this guy down to the point that, you know, he doesn't even have the strength to put his arms up. So they're just, you know, to add insult to injury, Anvil's going to hold him while Bret clotheslines him. Like, to me, that's something that I can, within the context of the story of a wrestling match, I can get into.
Yeah, I mean, just about any finisher I'm okay with that makes it look like you are so fatigued, and that's how I'm able to pull this move off. Not, it's the right time, you better hold up your end of the bargain and hold yourself on my shoulders. You know, like, it should look like I've beaten you up so much that this move has to work. You know?
Exactly.
All right. One topic for you on finishers I wanted to get your opinion on is, what do you think about finishers that were regular moves, as in Hogan's leg drop, Lawler's pile driver, or Jake the Snake's DDT, which, by the way, did he invent the DDT?
He's widely credited with, at the very least, I think what you can say is he popularized it and, you know, was the most notable person to use it. He was the first person sort of on a national scale to use it as a finisher. Whether he actually invented it, he claims he does, but I don't know if that's entirely true. Because, I mean, essentially it's just a front face lock. But I think you can definitely say that in terms of getting it over as a legit finisher, I think, you know, credit there has to go to Jake.
Yeah, I could agree with that. But I mean, those are now regular moves. And even back then, for the most part, I mean, anybody could do a pile driver. So what are your thoughts on regular moves that are finishers?
I think it can work if it's stylized in a way that really makes it stand out. And, you know, for a finisher to be really good and memorable, it has to have that certain amount of flair to it. Like, to use the DDT as an example, I mean, Jake wouldn't just... And Jake, I think, you know, if you want to look at a guy when he was in his prime that just knew how to manipulate the crowd, like, you're not going to find many guys as good or better than Jake. Because the thing I remember about him with the DDT, it was the way he would set it up. Like, he wouldn't just, you know, they'd be bouncing off the ropes and all of a sudden DDT out of nowhere, which drives me nuts. Like, okay, that can be a good dramatic finish in a big match with, you know, to end a feud. But, you know, when you're establishing, I think what got the DDT over as a finisher is, you know, as I remember it, Jake would always do that short clothesline where he'd knock the guy over, and then he would, like, look at the crowd and he would just sort of whip his hand over his head. And
was that, like, he did like a symbol, like he, like almost like a finger in the air, kind of, you know. Okay.
Yeah, and like that's when you knew it was coming. And he would, you know, he would pick the guy up, he would put him, and like you said earlier, you know, the guy's already beaten at this point. The DDT is more like for emphasis, just to, you know, really drive the point home that the match is over. And like he would stand there and he would, he would look at the crowd and look at the camera, and, you know, he just, he was so good at doing, like, the little subtle things. Like, if he would have just, by comparison, just, you know, I don't know, body slammed the guy, picked him up, and DDT'd him, it wouldn't have been as great a finisher. So
he had the dramatics down pretty well, I think. And, you know, one thing, we'll go jot this down for a future show when I talk about when we discuss like gimmicks of wrestlers and whatever. But I agree with you on Jake with that, and with that kind of the mental game. However, he did use a snake, and it's like, man, I wonder if a lot of what he did gets easily, I don't know, nullified, maybe is not the right term, but the idea is like, well, yeah, he did this, he did that. Oh man, he got the crowd over by doing it. But then he's like, well, he had to pull a snake out and put it on a guy. It's like, what is that? You know? So, well, that's a little teaser for a future episode.
So, but you know, I kind of gave a shaggy dog answer in a roundabout way. So I think, you know, normal moves can be finishers if they're stylized correctly. Because, you know, a good example of that from relatively recent history is, you know, and it's as goofy a move as it is, the people's elbow. I mean, it's an elbow drop, but because of the way The Rock got it over, people bought it as a finisher. Now, I'm kind of contradicting myself because, you know, he would be so over the top with it, you know, the guy would be lying down for 10 minutes before he even right. dropped it. But, you know, and he would also, like, sort of change up the little shuck and jive he would do before he actually dropped the elbow, depending on who he was facing. So, right. you know, I can forgive, you know, my formerly stated requirement of, you know, a guy not defending himself against a move when it's in the name of, you know, something greater on the whole.
Okay, so of that same era, you're saying the people's elbow you're cool with, but Scotty Too Hottie's worm you're not, or Road Dogg's, like, whatever it's stupid, whatever little dance he used to do, you know, and then he does a knee drop or something. It's like, what? First off, dude, you're wearing fucking sweatpants, number one. You're not going to kick my ass wearing sweatpants. Number two, what was that, though?
I mean, tights are not his friend.
Quick side note, there was a Royal Rumble where Road Dogg went in early on and he fucking hid. I don't know how you hide in the ring, but he found a way to, like, grab a rope and hide, like, near the apron for a good, like, 5 or 6 minutes. And me and my buddies were watching this shit. We're like, is anyone else seeing, like, I don't know what else is going on, but is anyone else seeing this? That Road Dogg, like, is real life cheating, basically, by choosing not to fight. We were getting pissed. It was like Royal Rumble, like, 2000 or something. I'm going to look that up. But anyway, I hate that guy. All right, go on.
I forget what you asked me.
Oh, so people's elbow legitimates, but the worm is not.
It also depends on where it is on the card, too. I mean, Scotty Too Hottie wasn't doing the worm when he was wrestling Stone Cold for the, you know, heavyweight title. He was doing the worm against, you know, the Attitude Era equivalent of Barry Horowitz in a mid-card comedy match.
Okay. All right. I'll give you that. So it's a respect thing, kind of a certain level.
Yeah, it's kind of an apples and oranges thing. And again, you know, we talked about this in a previous episode. You know, you need those different flavors and styles to characters and matches as well. So, you know, a comedic character, if he has a comedic finisher that, you know, stretches the boundaries of even what makes sense within the plot devices of wrestling, you know, if he's fulfilling his, like Santino and the Cobra, I mean, that's among the least believable finishers around, but
it's so stupid, but is it any different than Mr. Sock?
No, but, you know, you got to say, like, you know, the Cobra's over. Like, when he does it, the crowd reacts to it. But it's also being done by a guy that, you know, is in a mid-card comedic role.
Yeah, all right. That's what he's supposed to do. All right. Let me throw a finisher out there for you. I want to get your thoughts on it. Triple H's pedigree. Now, two things with that. One, it's kind of funny. It's called the pedigree. And that, remember his original character, or was that kind of
the blue,
like,
the blue blood?
Right, and he had, like, that little whip or whatever, you know, and he used to do that little, like, bow or curtsy or whatever the fuck that was, you know, and that was cool. And he's had the same finisher for whatever it's been now, you know, close to 20 years probably, I don't know, maybe 15, 16 years, whatever. And it's still the same move, but to this day, it's been one of my favorite finishers because it looks like the way he locks your arms, it looks like what he's doing is saying, I'm going to make sure that you're going to get hurt on this, or I'm going to make sure this, you're not going to counter it, or you're going to hit, you know what I mean? It looks like he takes an extra measure in the match as somebody that is like, I don't know what you want to call it, that kind of like calculated type wrestler as a gimmick, which he later evolved to be that kind of, you know, cerebral assassin, all that kind of stuff. I mean, to think about it, I'm going to lock this arm, I'm going to lock this arm, and then I'm going to drive you into the mat. So I'm pretty much exposing you and then putting you in. I really like that finisher a lot.
Yeah, it looks really good. I would concur with you there. It's just interesting to me because, like you said, I mean, when he was doing, you know, that silly blue blood character, like having a name to it, like the Pedigree, makes sense. It's just right. Funny to me that they've kept that name.
I know, and they change other names. Like Cena went, because when he, you know, he was the rapper, he had like the FU, making fun of like Brock's F5, I guess. And then it's like Attitude Adjustment or STFU, like Shut the Fuck Up, which I thought was hilarious, by the way. I was a huge Cena fan when he first started. I thought he was just awesome. He brought not only like the great comedic part of it, but he was great on the mic, obviously, and he was over in the ring. And for that type of wrestler, I know, whatever, you can't wrestle, all that kind of I'm not talking about like technical wrestling, but for those kind of that style of wrestling, I equate it to like The Rock. It's the same kind of thing where you have, you know, you have the big high impact moves, and that's the majority of the match are those kind of moves. And I thought he was great. So, I mean, yeah, it's kind of funny. They changed that name of the moves around. But Triple H is still the Pedigree. Like, no matter what, I don't care if you're the blue blood, you know, Triple H from Greenwich, or your DX, you know, pulling your balls out on people in matches and shit, you know, doing the chop and all that. And then later on, like, oh, I'm the assassin and I'm the game. It's like, no matter what, it's still like, oh, I've got the Pedigree. You know, no matter
what. I'm going to put the Pedigree on you.
Right. Good sir, I'm going to apply the Pedigree.
You cad.
A little catcher's catch can action right
yes,
there.
Yes, yes. At catch weight. But funny story about the Pedigree. My friend used to watch wrestling with his little brother, who was like 8 at the time. And, you know, like kids that age are dumb and can't talk right. He would call the Pedigree the pedicure.
Oh, awesome. That's a different finisher.
Yeah, but I just thought that was really funny. He would correct him on it. It's like, no, it's the Pedigree. And he's like, no, it's the pedicure. That's just what he called it.
You should tell him, like, there was actually a stable going to be developed that Brutus the Barber Beefcake was going to put together. So he's the barber. There was going to be a guy that gives pedigrees, or no, pedicures. There's a guy that gives Brazilian waxes. And, you know, this is a stable of all those guys. Like, I don't know. Like the spa stable of some sort. That could work. I'm going to work on that. It could work. You know,
you have like, a German guy from Baden-Baden, the masseuse.
Oh, the masseuse would be good. How about like a chiropractor gone bad, like the adjuster?
The chiro bastard.
Yeah, right. That's good. We should definitely have a show of fake wrestlers. Fake wrestlers. You know?
Made up shit.
Right. All right. So
I wanted to revisit tag team finishers because I really like tag team wrestling in general. And in more recent times, tag team wrestling's kind of been de-emphasized. But one thing that I really liked about tag team wrestling is when you had guys that were, instead of just two guys thrown together, when you had guys that were, you know, a true tag team that had, you know, a theme to it. And, you know, they complemented each other well. I really liked seeing the finishers that they would come up with. And one of the ones that's, to this day, is my favorite, and I think it looked awesome, was, do you remember for a very brief period of time, it was one of the times that they were trying to get Paul Roma over. He was tag-teamed with Hercules, and they were called Power and Glory.
Oh, yeah, I do remember
and
that.
I loved their finisher, because they kind of did the thing where, you know, Hercules would come in and do all the, you know, the big, like, you know, deadlift moves and stuff like that. And
of course,
and Roma
yeah.
would do all the finesse stuff. And their do you remember their finisher?
I don't remember. I it's kind of funny is like everything you say starts to bring back a memory of it, but I couldn't think of what their finisher or what they were doing off the top of my head. Now, what did they do?
Hercules would give a guy a second rope superplex, and right as he landed, Roma would jump off the top rope and splash him.
Like a frog splash?
Or just like a normal, but that kind of move, like a top rope splash.
So it was like a timing-based, like, 1-2 punch, so to speak.
Yeah, so it was like, you know, two relatively normal moves, but combined to make a finisher.
That's kind of cool. I mean, I kind of like that idea. You know, like in ECW, RVD and Sabu had, you know, for a long time they were tagging up, and they would do, I think, like, in unison, leg drops and splash off the top rope at the same time. And I think that's been done a lot. I think the double top rope, but the one you mentioned is interesting because you have like the power guy doing, you know, an actual power type move. And then the relatively high flyer comparatively, you know, doing that type of move.
Kind of the cool. Glory hole.
That was a different show. That was
the glory. Different kind of wrestling.
Right. Yeah. So, okay, I like that. It's pretty cool. And I get what you're saying. I definitely want to do tag team discussion on a future episode in general and talk about...
Like the musical group that did Whoop, There It Is?
Yes, actually. That's exactly what I meant. Because I've heard tag team is back again, and I also heard it's Check It to Wreck It to Let's Begin as well. So, I've heard that. I've heard.
I shouldn't try and like outwit you because you're a radio guy, and like you're when it, with musical references, I'm not going to win.
No, I mean, no. I'm glad you do it though. Keep doing it. It's fun.
Yeah, keep making me look better than you.
No. There's no better. When discussing tag team, the musical group, no one wins.
Period. Or everyone wins.
No, wow. You could say that, I guess. But, you know, I do want to talk about tag teams at a future episode as far as the idea of it's cool to have a tag team be a tag team with their own moves and name and theme. But then again, will it hurt them in the long run when they get their big singles push? So that's for, you know, obviously we'll stick to finishers now. But, that was the one you described was pretty cool. I remember Demolition was pretty cool. The one dude holding the other one kind of on his knee.
I never liked that one. I just thought that looked so stupid.
Why? Why did it look stupid?
It just didn't look like it. It looked like the guy holding him on his knee was, like, helping it hurt less.
No. I don't like that at all. I'll tell you why. When I was a kid... Being a young metalhead at age 8.
Did you give that move to your mom and now she's like in a wheelchair?
Yeah, that's right. I put her. You know what it is? I didn't give her the move, but I hired Crush to give her the move instead.
And now he's dead. Way to bring it in. Way to bring it down.
You know what? Johnny P family 1, Crush family 0. Suck on them tatties. Anyway.
So in all seriousness, why did you like that?
In all seriousness, let's discuss Demolition. So as a kid, though, as a young metalhead, I was like, these guys are the best. First off, they're coming out to the ring, like dressed as like Rob Halford on steroids and more gay. And they're just like, you know, walking militia, blah, blah, you know, that shit. I was like, these guys are awesome. So to me, as a kid, they could do no wrong. Yes, Axe and Smash were both very out of shape. Yes, they were already sweating and ruining their makeup before they even got to the ring. I know this. Yes, that finisher looked like, I think it was Axe that held him, like kind of tried to help out the situation by not making, I know all that, but come on, it was Demolition. I have to give them nostalgia points for me. Sorry.
No, you don't have to apologize, but I don't know. Demolition just never did it for me because I remember... At the time, on my local TV, we got the AWA, and so I was seeing the Road Warriors, and I just remember seeing Demolition and thinking, what? Like, this is so flagrantly, like, a low-rent version of the Road Warriors. And, you know, say what you want about the Road Warriors, and I know I made fun of their finisher earlier. Like, those guys looked the part. Like, Demolition looked like what you'd think the Road Warriors would look like 30 years later, still trying to do the gimmick on the indies.
Yeah, I could sort of see that. Now, again, I wasn't that aware. When I was a kid, there was occasionally we'd watch NWA wrestling here and there, and the Road Warriors, would pop up from time to time. But I didn't really watch it much. I was pretty much all WWF. But, the one thing that was kind of funny with Demolition, even as a kid, always seemed like Axe always seemed like he was like 50 years old. Like how, is this guy like an old metalhead? That's kind of cool. Is he like somebody's dad? Like, how did he get in here? You know, did they give him a ticket? You know, and
he sets up the ring. And,
all right, he sets up the ring. He does the merch sales. But you know, what's funny is I didn't actually think about Road Warriors in them until later on when the Powers of Pain came out. That's when it was like, okay, these guys are the Road Warriors. You know,
yeah. And but you know what I will say about Demolition is like I loved Axe's promos.
Oh, Axe was great.
But I think what really, like, what broke immersion for me with Demolition was they would take their hockey masks off, and they would have, like, the sparkly stuff in their hair, but they both had, like, the biggest bald spots ever.
Oh, because they were old. They were, like, 40, I know, 50 years old.
But it wasn't even, like, you know, a subtle bald spot that they tried to comb over. Like Barry Darso had, like, you know, the bald guy hair that, like, you know, just stopped caring, like, you know, it was like right. Wispy like all over the place, and it's just like, how do you expect me to take this guy seriously as a badass,
right? Because all the rest of the stuff about their gimmick otherwise would make you take them seriously, of course. You know, it's like, all right, you know what, you guys had me until I saw that fucking bald spot. All right, you're done. I'm not buying it.
That was, well, maybe not, but that was definitely, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back for me. And, like, for the record, I'm bald, so, you know, no disrespect to the follically challenged. But I have the decency to shave my head.
Well, that wasn't the style back then, but that's for the tag team discussion. We'll get into that. So, tag team finishers, I agree with you. All really cool. Going again back to ECW and the 3D or the Dudley Death Drop, and that, you know, that kind of obviously went beyond back into WWE and all that. So that was a pretty cool move, and it's kind of nice when things are synced up so you can pull that off.
Now, do you remember any tag team finishers that just looked lame?
Did the Conquistadors have a finisher?
No. Well, if they did, no one ever knew because they always got killed in 10 seconds.
All right, did the Flying Bees have a, or a killer?
The
bees?
Flying Bees. I just...
Do they have a finisher besides cheating?
I know. By the way, good, nice, yeah, baby faces.
That's a tag team discussion on that one. But yeah, that's...
I remember when, right, Bobby Heenan was... I think it was the Brain Busters were wrestling them, and Bobby Heenan said he was going to come to the ring with a bucket of paint and paint one on the back of one and two on the back of the other.
Good, he should.
Yeah. I don't remember them having like a definitive finisher. I remember there was a talking about moves that like were stupid and broke immersion. Do you remember them when they would do the bee sting?
Which was that a high flying move? Well, no?
Not really. It was like they would whip a guy into the ropes and then run up to him and then like just like jump up and put their ass in his face.
Like a stink face?
No, but like while running, like it was just like, you know, I'm going to knock you down by putting my butt against you.
You know what? It's been a successful finisher for a lot of people. Yokozuna, Rikishi, generally guys with giant asses.
Yeah,
for the most
part.
But
it was that was a move that, like, in the halls of my high school, you would just, like, if a guy wasn't paying attention, you just, like, run up behind him, like, jump and turn around in midair and just yell, "Bee sting!" Knock him over.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I don't remember them having a definitive finisher.
I don't remember that.
Maybe
either.
They did. It's like, but I don't remember. There was one tag team finisher that I just remember being so stupid, but I'm pretty sure it was intentionally this way, because the Rougeau brothers.
Okay, I remember them. They were cool.
For a while, they were baby faces, but they were a lot better when they were heels. When Jimmy,
Jock and Raymond.
Right, and I think they only did this when they were heels, because I remember when they were generic baby faces, they did a move that was kind of like the Doomsday Device called Le Bombe de Rougeau, which, you know, how can you be a baby face with a finishing move like that? But I remember when they were heels, and I may be remembering this wrong. I can't remember if this was the Rougeau brothers or when it was the Quebecers with Jacques and Pierre-Carl Ouellette, I think. But one of them would, you know, very trepidate, and I think they did it on purpose just to annoy the crowd, and it worked, at least on me. One of them would very gingerly, like, climb to the top rope, and it seemed, like, in my memory, I'm thinking, like, you know, he's intentionally looking like he's having a hard time keeping his balance. And so, like, one guy would be, like, on, like he'd have his feet on the top turnbuckle and be kind of crouching. And then the other one would go, like the, his partner would go and put his back to the turnbuckles and hold up his hands. And the guy on the top turnbuckle would grab his hands and then just kind of do a somersault and like do a senton onto the opponent. But it just looked so funny. It's like, you know, it's like, you know, a, like a, an 8-year-old being spotted in gymnastics over the vaulting horse. Like that's what it reminded me of.
It looks like, yeah, like a kid in gymnastics with his dad out there helping him out, you know? It's like something's a little off there. Yeah, there was some finishers that were like that, where you had to like basically hold hands with your partner to pull it off. And it's like, all right, this it wasn't gay before, but now it is.
And you know, I remember thinking, like, I remember hating that finisher as a viewer. But like, I'll say this much: if they did that on purpose to like get that reaction out of me, well done, because that was funny stuff.
I don't think that was on purpose, though. But like I'm thinking about like the Hardy Boys and Jeff Hardy. I was doing like the senton, that or swanton as he called it. It always seemed like when he did his version of it that it was such a bad finisher, even though it was way over with the crowd as like a, all right, that just put him away. That's going to win him, you know, the title. And it's like, okay, you're basically hitting somebody with like a, like 3 inches of the top of your back. Like that's not going to hurt anyone except yourself really bad. And it always looked like that would kill him and not even hurt the opponent at all. But it was so over, that swanton, right?
Yeah, that's another good like category of finishers to discuss. Like, are there finishers that look like they would hurt you more than the person that you're trying to hit it on?
Yeah, and that's definitely one for me that always seemed like, I mean, there are ones that the wrestlers do, some wrestlers do a great job of selling. Like Rob Van Dam is one of the best in that. He'll do the frog splash. I'm like, oh, it's like, dude, he just got 40 moves off in a row, but he'll sell that like, you know, like, oh, I jumped too high on that one. And like, you can't pin him right away because he got hurt so bad. That's cool. He's overselling that. But like, that's one where he's not, you know, it looks like it would actually hurt the opponent. It was, and it's meant to, but in the vein of like that swanton, it's like, well, this really didn't do anything except help you not get hurt.
The one that always looked to me like that would hurt the guy doing it more, you know, not to give too much coverage to Benoit, but when he would do that diving headbutt, it's like, how is that not knocking you out? And he kind of would do the same thing, kind of like Van Damme, like kind of, you know, he wouldn't just bounce up and cover the guy. He would, you know, like get up and like shake his head and stuff like that.
Yeah, but that was real life.
that was a shoot, brother.
That was shoot radio material right there. Are there other ones in that? I think of more than just Jeff Hardy. I know there's more out there that would hurt you more if it was real.
One of the ones that, you know, from a little more recent memory is Jericho's code breaker. Like, you're jumping up in the air and landing flat on your back. Like,
I don't like that move. And as much as I'm a huge Jericho mark, I don't like that move. And I know he kind of evolved, you know, after you've been around a while, you have to just keep adding on some new finishers. Just, you kind of have
to. No, like, yeah, credit to him for just doing something different.
It is different, but I don't know. It's kind of like, it's kind of almost like a girl kind of move, you know, where it's kind of not really, you're just falling down, you know, it looks, I don't know. I mean, and again, everything else Jericho does is perfect. I mean, Lion Salt, Walls of Jericho or Lion Tamer, love all that shit. But yeah, Codebreaker is tough for me. You know, it's like, I don't like that one, but that's along the same vein though. You're right. A lot of top rope moves always make me wonder. You know, when people do like, you know, like moonsaults or whatever, and they don't land properly, I always think like, man, that would suck. That's your finisher. Cause it's like, you could easily fuck that up or your opponent could fuck that up and you get
see
hurt.
See Brock Lesnar, WrestleMania 19, I think it was when he landed on it. Do you remember that? When he did the shooting star press and landed on his face?
God, I don't know. Why was he up there to begin with?
I know. I mean, as impressive a visual as that was to see a guy that was like a legit almost 300 pounds doing a shooting star press, like, man, I hope he got like $5 million for doing that, because I don't think I've seen somebody, you know, on live TV come so close to killing themselves.
I know. It was bad. And like, I was a big Brock. I mean, I still am. I'm a Brock Lesnar fan. I think he was great for the industry. And I think I read a really good article, but I don't want to get into it now, but I had a good article with him, and he's a smart guy too. Like, even though a lot of people think he seems like a dumbass and kind of a dope about stuff, but he's a really smart dude. But anyway, that's another one. But Yeah, I don't know if there's a whole lot of other, I think, you know, besides top rope moves and high risk moves, you know, I don't know if there's a whole lot of other ones in that category.
So one thing I wanted to talk about, Johnny, I'll change gears a little here. Are there any finishers that you've seen, you know, any era that are just plain uncomfortable for you to watch because of how dangerous they look? Because I had two that I know you've taken a look at. One was, you know, something that's being done today, the Canadian Destroyer, and another one that's more on the Japanese scene, the Gonzo Bomb. And for those that may not know, like, the Canadian Destroyer is basically, it's like you're going for a sunset flip, but instead of just dropping the guy on his back, you're giving him a pile driver. And the Gonzo Bomb is, you know, sort of in the same vein where you're picking up a guy like you're going to give him a power bomb, but you essentially give him a pile driver from, you know, with his head about 4 feet higher than he would be for a typical pile driver spot.
And I would say both of these ones you sent over fall directly into that category for me. Like, I love the, you know, quote unquote, holy shit moments of pro wrestling, you know, throwing Mankind off the cage or throwing Spike Dudley in the crowd or whatever. I love that kind of stuff. But when there's moves that are seen that they're like intentionally, no pun intended, over the top, you know, as far as trying to like, okay, a power bomb isn't good enough. We've got to make it this. And I don't get it with the amount of injuries, both like, see, you know, career ending injuries and, you know, deaths, not necessarily directly in the ring, but just from cumulative effects of things too. And it's like, it boggles my mind when those kind of moves, you know, and I don't know, it may sound kind of like, I don't know, wussing out on the whole, but the reality is like those moves, like, I don't get why. You could do so much more with other moves or stringing together other moves. And also just the in-ring psychology and promos than to have to think to yourself, oh shit, I better create a finisher so ridiculous that this is going to get me over. Cause you don't want to have to rely on that to get you over. Cause you're not going to be doing that shit when you're 50. That's for sure.
Yeah. Or taking it when you're 50. And, you know, disclaimer, you know, I'm not a wrestler. I mean, maybe the Canadian Destroyer is the safest move in the world, but in terms of how it looks, like, I don't know, man, like putting your neck in that kind of peril just seems unnecessary to me. As impressive as it is to watch, it's just like, I don't know, it kind of crosses that line between, okay, I'm watching guys doing stuff that, you know, I mean, no wrestling move is safe, but, you know, you can take a calculated risk on, you know, landing flat on your back. Whereas when you're, right, you know, doing a front roll and landing on your head, like, that's, the margin for error there is, you know, infinitesimally small. And I just, for me, I don't need to see moves like that to, you know, think, man, you know, this is a really great wrestling match.
I know, exactly. I actually, you know, I would feel bad. I think like, man, why are these guys doing this? You know, and it's like in wrestling video games where you get to make all your own moves. They always have these ridiculous finishers in there, like drop, and somehow they involve dropping people on their head all the time. And you always think like, man, I'm glad nobody actually has this. For a video game, it's fucking awesome though. But, you know, and then in real life, it still happens, but maybe they're independents or, you know, not quite as well known. And, you know, on a similar note, you know, we talked earlier about pile drivers. Was the pile driver, like, was that like banned as a finisher for a long time?
Since around 2000, it was in the, if I'm remembering correctly, it was in the wake of when Owen broke Steve Austin's neck with a pile driver. And
was that it, or was it when D'Lo broke Draza's neck?
Well, that wasn't a pile driver. That was,
oh, what was that?
It was D'Lo used to have a running power bomb. I think it was called the Sky High.
Okay, not the lowdown was the top rope,
yeah,
right?
I think if I'm remembering correctly, it was the Sky High, and it was just, that was just a case of a, you know, I mean, again, not like giving a guy a power bomb is ever, you know, safe. But, you know, I think it's widely accepted that that was just, you know, a really unfortunately bad landing against, because, I mean, a powerbomb essentially is still just, you know, in terms of the risk to your body, I mean, it's not too much of a departure from a straight up flat back bump, as I understand it. But Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was in the wake of when, you know, late 90s when Owen broke Austin's neck with a pile driver. That they basically, unless you were Kane or Undertaker at WrestleMania, like, you weren't allowed to do a pile driver.
Yeah, it was like only the tombstones were allowed. And it seemed kind of like, it's weird because, like we were talking about earlier, with the amount of risky moves that are out there, I mean, anything from the top rope, anything where your head can take the brunt of the bump, I mean, those should all be banned then. But the yet pile driver, it was weird because I've seen a lot of, I mean, just as a wrestling fan, you've seen a lot of pile drivers over the years. And there are some that look like, man, his head is nowhere, even on the tombstone, his head is nowhere near the mat. Like, I mean, the worst part about getting a pile driver from Undertaker is having his face in your nuts because your head's nowhere hitting the mat. You know, it's like, it's the safest can be move the way he does it. You know, you're so far off.
Which is good.
But like, it is good, except for the nut munching. Yeah.
Well, speak for yourself, Johnny. I mean,
yeah, that's well. I'll let Kane do it because I like the feeling of the mask on my balls. But, it seems strange, though, to ban that move, at least in WWE, when it happens everywhere else and other moves are just as potentially harmful, if not more.
Yeah, it's it's a weird business.
I'm sure part of it, too, was, hey, this happened from a pile driver, so now we ban it, as opposed to a preemptive ban, you know?
Exactly. It's like, were all those other pile drivers safe? Like, did we, knowing what we know now about pile drivers, we better not do them anymore.
Yeah. Man, and unfortunately, Jerry Lawler is still wrestling every now and then, unfortunately. I hate him. We'll definitely have a show on wrestlers we hate, like despise, and that's one.
There's a teaser. Johnny goes off on Jerry Lawler.
Oh, he sucks. How he fucking hides his crown. Every time somebody gets close to the announcer table, he has to pick up his crown. Like, read the fuck lax, dude. Okay, your $9 pawn shop crown is not going to get damaged, and if it does, who cares?
Or just put it on your head.
Yeah, calm down, you fucking orange face greaseball.
He just, like, he never wears it. He just carries it around.
No, because you know why? Because his fucking head's all greased up. It would slide right off every time. the guy looks like he's made out of, like, greasy fucking oranges. It's disgusting.
Made out of.
Yeah, he is. So anyway, yeah, definitely enjoy that teaser. You know, that's going to be a can't miss episode.
But, that for half an hour.
Yeah, right. Greasy oranges, half hour. So yeah, I think anything else you want to cover in the finishers?
No, I think I think we can tap out.
Do you want to just throw one out there? Favorite finisher of all time? Do you have one?
I don't know if I'm kind of blurring this with one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, but I was always a big fan of the shake, rattle, and roll, just because of, again, how over the top and ridiculous it was. Just the fact that, you know, it's a good example of what we were talking about earlier, you know, a normal move, you know, a rolling neck breaker, but just because the fact that the Honky Tonk Man would, you know, wiggle his ass first and then, like, do the back and forth. He's like, you know, am I going to drop you now? Am I going to drop you now? Oh, now I'm going to drop you. I don't know why. That one always just, it always made me laugh and I always really liked it.
And I think it's totally legitimate to have that be, like, you know, if not your favorite, one of your favorites due to the guy who's actually delivering it. That's a big part of it, I think. You know, I mean, I would say, for me, I kind of touched on it earlier, but I like the Walls of Jericho / Lion Tamer a lot when he does it like the right way, not when it looks like a Boston Crab. Because to me, it's like, okay, not only am I going to destroy your back, but I'm going to mush your face and neck into the mat too. And I just love that because, like, especially when Jericho plays a really good heel character, it just seems like it's just a perfect finisher for him. You know, and then he'll kick the guy over and do, like, a, you know, a cocky pin. Remember when he first came in WWF and he, like, just puts his foot on them and, like, does the pose. Like, I love that kind of shit. So again, it's a move, a finisher, but also in a large part to the guy delivering it too. So, all right. Very good. So I think it is about time for us to tap out. I'm going to give you an ankle lock.
I'm going to give you a figure 5 leg lock.
Oh, shit. I'm going to give you a triple axe handle. Three arms, motherfucker.
Instead of hitting you with the forearm, I'm going to hit you with the five arm. Like,
I'm going to hit you with... No, I'm going to actually have do the axe handle, but then put an actual axe handle in the middle of it. You'll never see it.
But you just told me.
Yeah, you're going to be knocked out. I'm going to do a bunch of shit beforehand. I'm not one of those guys that tries to pull off a finisher when it's not time. I would have already beaten you up good enough to bust out the triple axe handle. Just get ready for it, but don't get ready for it at the same time. All right. We got a good understanding. All right, guys. I think that wraps up Shoot Radio Episode 2, covering finishers. If you missed our last one on managers, Episode 1, go check that out. And stay tuned for Episode 3.
You can find more great podcasts at lifestylepodnetwork.com.au.